Welcome to today's Talk Freight Seminar Series. My name is Nicholas Kehoe, and I will moderate today's seminar. Today's topic is on an overview of the National Clean Fleets Partnership. And before I go any further, I do want to let those of you know, those of you who are calling into the teleconference for audio know, that you will need to mute your computer speakers or else you will be hearing audio over the computer as well. Today we will have three presenters. Mark Smith, the National Clean Fleets Partnership Program Manager with the U.S. Department of Energy, Kevin Walkowitz with the National Renewable Energy Lab, and Kishav Sandhi with FedEx Express. Mark Smith is the Vehicle Technology Deployment Manager for the Department of Energy's National Clean Cities Program. His responsibilities include developing outreach strategies for implementing new national partnerships between industry and the Clean Cities Program to successfully deploy new vehicle technologies. Mark also works with the regional managers and individual Clean Cities coalitions to implement deployment strategies at the regional and local levels. In addition, he develops and maintains relationships with key stakeholders, including vehicle manufacturers, fuel suppliers, educational institutions, environmental groups, nonprofit associations, government agencies, and other related organizations to expand the use of alternate fuels and advanced vehicle technologies. Before joining the DOE, Mark was an alternate fuel vehicle consultant to American Honda. In this position, he promoted the use of Honda's alternate fuel vehicles to public and private fleet managers and implemented programs to increase deployment of these vehicles. Mark also understands that alternate fuel vehicles deployment hinges upon the development of refueling infrastructure. From his previous positions with FuelMaker and Clean Energy, he has provided an alternate refueling solutions ranging from home refueling of a single vehicle to some of the largest commercial, airport, and transit fueling stations in the United States. Kevin Walkowitz is a team leader for the fleet testing and evaluation at the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in Golden, Colorado, and one of the principal investigators for the U.S. Department of Energy's advanced vehicle testing activity. His primary focus is on capturing and analyzing and reporting in-use data from advanced technology medium and heavy-duty commercial vehicles. Prior to joining the National Renewable Energy Laboratory in January of 2001, he led fuel system and advanced evaporation emissions control system development at projects at General Motors Corporation at their Milford Proving Ground. Kishav Sandhi is the manager for the Global Vehicle Asset Management Group at FedEx Express. He is responsible for strategic and tactical fleet plans. His expertise is in the area of fleet optimization, which includes evaluating competing platforms as well as vehicles within the same platform for parcel delivery industry. His work has included modeling and identifying of the right vehicle for each mission type based upon economical as well as environmental merits. One of his primary roles is continuing improvement on the environmental impact of the vehicle fleet at FedEx. His work in combining business objectives with sustainability goals at FedEx earned him a 2011 Aspen Institute's First Movers Fellowship. In association with the organization Embark, he is sharing his expertise and knowledge of fleet management and environmental impact reduction with fleet operators in large cities such as Mexico City. Today's seminar will last 90 minutes with 60 minutes allocated for the speaker and a final 30 minutes for audience question and answer. If during the presentation you think of a question, you can type it into the chat area. Please make sure that you send your question to everyone. The presenters will be unable to answer their questions during their presentation, but I will start off the question and answer session with the questions typed into the chat box. If we run out of time and are unable to address all the questions, we will attempt to get written responses from the presenters to the unanswered questions. The PowerPoint presentations used today are available from the file share box located on the lower right-hand corner of your screen. The presentations will also be available online within the next few weeks, along with a recording and transcript of today's event. I will notify all attendees once these materials are posted online. As a final note, today's Talking Freight seminars are eligible for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for AICP members. In order to obtain credit for today's seminar, you must have logged in with your first and last name, or if you are attending with a group of people, you must type in your first and last name into the chat box. I have included more detailed instructions in the file share box on how to obtain credits after the seminar. Please also download the evaluation form from the file share box and submit it to me after you've filled it out. While FHWA does not formally offer the professional development hour credits and will not provide proof of attendance, we have made an agenda available in the file download box that participants can use to self-certify and submit for credits of their own. We are now going to go ahead and get started. For those of you who just joined, today's topic is an overview of the National Clean Suites Partnership. As a reminder, if you have questions during the presentation, please type them into the chat box and they will be answered in the last 30 minutes of the seminar. Our first presenter will be Mark Smith of the U.S. Department of Energy. And Mark, I'll bring up your presentation, and once you are ready, you can begin.
Great. Thank you, Nicholas, and thanks, everybody, for tuning in today. Hopefully, this overview gives you a good understanding of the National Clean Fleets Partnership, which is part of the Clean Cities program here at DOE that I'll explain during my presentation. Also shows you how we work closely with one of our labs, the DOE labs, the National Renewable Energy Lab out in Golden, Colorado, where Kevin was from, and a lot of the support work they do to help us here on the Clean Cities program and with the National Clean Fleets Partnership, and specifically some of Kevin's duties with the drive cycle and duty cycle analysis. And then finally, with Keshav from FedEx Express, who is one of our stakeholders in Clean Cities and the National Clean Fleets Partnership. So hopefully, by the time you set through this, if the three of us have done our jobs properly, you'll kind of come away with a good understanding of how our programs all link together and hopefully, at the end of the day, ultimately help fleets like FedEx Express and others to deploy alternative fuels and advanced technology vehicles into their fleets. So with that, let me get started here. As I mentioned, our program, the National Clean Fleets Partnership, is part of the Department of Energy's Clean Cities program. They're not mutually exclusive programs. And so to understand the Clean Fleets Partnership, I need to give you some history of Clean Cities. So Clean Cities is actually this year, we're celebrating our 20th birthday. We were born out of the Energy Policy Act of 1992. The first coalition was started in 1993. The program was started in 93, and since then we've developed a number of coalitions throughout the country. But our main goal, the goal of Clean Cities, is really to work with fleets to help them reduce the amount of petroleum they're using in the transportation sector. Here at DOE, our program is housed in the Office of Vehicle Technologies, and so a lot of our colleagues here in the Vehicle Technologies Office are working on a lot of more near-term kind of R&D-type projects, if you will, to try to help get some of these new technologies and fuels out. So we have, for example, a group that works on batteries and battery technology and battery storage, and how do you get more range out of batteries and reduce the cost. And we have another group working on materials and light weighting of vehicles. In other words, how do you take some of the weight out of vehicles to make them more fuel efficient, but yet obviously keep them safe? We have a fuels and lubricants group. We have another group that is working on vehicle systems integrations. How do you get all this stuff into a vehicle? And then here at Clean Cities, we kind of like to think of ourselves as that deployment arm of the Vehicle Technologies Office. So once these advanced vehicle technologies and alternative fuels become commercially deployable, then we at Clean Cities put on our hats and start working with fleets from the public sector and the private sector to help them get the vehicles on the road, and B, also to help get the necessary refueling or recharging infrastructure in. And again, the whole emphasis is really on how do we reduce the amount of petroleum used in the transportation sector, which obviously ties into other things like our energy, economic, and environmental security. So we accomplish this with kind of a two-pronged approach at the local level with our Clean Cities coalitions that I mentioned here a few slides ago, and I'll get into more detail on those folks. And then also here at the national level from the headquarters levels, where we're trying to manage a number of different programs to help make sure that the right tools and resources are in place for fleets to take advantage of, to make sure that we like to publicize the success of the program and the success of our stakeholders, and then also is to provide financial assistance. That's always been a key part of the program, and of course that varies a little bit depending on budgets and how the folks up on Capitol Hill are, and of course we all know what kind of mood they're in these days, but we'll touch a little bit on that as I go through the presentation. I mentioned that our metric is reducing petroleum, so this graph kind of illustrates some of our metrics throughout the 20-year history. We've played a part in Clean Cities in getting over 800,000 vehicles on the road, alternative fuel vehicles. By last count, there's about 12,000 refueling and recharging infrastructure stations out there. Clean Cities has had a part in getting almost three-quarters of those put in. And you can see our long-term goal is to reduce petroleum on an annual basis by 2.5 billion gallons a year by 2020, which here we are in 2013, so that's not that far away. We don't have 2012 up there, and I just realized this graph is outdated by a year, but through 2011, we've been able to displace right about just a little shy of 4 billion gallons. But again, our goal is 2.5 billion gallons by 2020. So by no means is our work over yet. Oftentimes I'm asked, well, geez, you know, do you guys, you know, what type of fuel do you guys push, or what type of technology? And it seems like for those of us on the government side, or those who have been in the alt fuel world for a while, it seems like, you know, every administration going back the last three or four administrations tends to have their favorite fuel or technology they push. And I think early on for this administration it was heavy on EVs, but we've heard that change over the course of the last year or so, where it's more of the all of the above strategy. And that's really our approach here at Clean Cities. It's not up to us to try to pick winners or losers, or to try to tell a fleet, hey, this is the fuel or technology you need to be using. But again, it's to make that whole portfolio of fuels and technologies available and provide the education in the background, so hopefully a fleet manager is able to help, is to make a good informed choice about what's going to work best for their fleet. So this is what is in our bag of tricks, if you will. The alternative fuels there on the top left-hand corner are the ones that are spelled out in the Energy Policy Act. Idle reduction has continued to play, or I should say plays probably a bigger part now than it has in the past several years. I think a lot of fleets, and FedEx Express is one of those, where you realize, you know, just by turning these vehicles off, you can save a lot of fuel. And so we've tailored a lot of programs, and just actually have a new program we just introduced to our Clean Cities coordinators to help them work with fleets on and the public on being able to reduce idle time and thus save fuel. Hybrids down on the bottom right-hand side there, of course, hybrids and plug-in vehicles. I think we're all familiar that there's been a tremendous amount of new product offerings into that segment of the market over the last couple of years, and we continue to see more coming. And then the top right-hand corner on fuel economy, you know, through the last 5 or 10 years, engines, the internal combustion engine, it has gotten smaller, but it has gotten, as a result, more powerful, more fuel efficient. So we're seeing a lot of right-sizing of fleets, if you will, where a fleet is realizing that, geez, maybe we don't need an E350 Ford van to do this particular job. We might be able to do that with a Ford Transit Connect. So downsize a vehicle, still running a gasoline internal combustion engine vehicle, but it's saving fuel because the fact that it's not as heavy and not as thirsty for fuel as what was being replaced. So the right sizing of fleets is another trend that we've seen become more popular the last couple of years, because I think that's an easy one for fleets to try to adopt. I mentioned the two-prong approach, the local coalitions and the partnership development throughout the country. So this map of the country kind of touches on, I have a bigger map here I'll bring up here in a second, but we've got about 100 Clean Cities coalitions throughout the country serving 80% of the population. So pretty much any major metropolitan area or anywhere, for the most part, there's people. We have a Clean Cities coalition. And these folks are really the boots on the ground. So these coordinators throughout the Clean Cities coalitions are the ones who are working with the various stakeholders in their area. So they're working with local and state governments. They're working with utilities. They're working with fleets from both the public and private sector. They're working with fuel providers, engine manufacturers. So they're the ones who are really trying to pull these projects together to get vehicles on the road, alternative fuel and advanced technology vehicles on the road, and to get in the necessary refueling or recharging infrastructure. So they're really kind of the experts in their area in terms of understanding who the players are, what the environment is like in terms of any grant and funding opportunities. So they're the ones who really can get these projects pulled together. It's interesting having these 100 coalitions out there, because our Clean Cities coordinators who run their coalitions, they're not DOE employees. However, we do have a contractual obligation with them, and there are certain deliverables they have to satisfy for their contract. But what's great about that is they're able to do a lot of things we aren't in many cases, in terms of being being able to do some lobbying at either the federal level or the state and local level. So that is a strength that they bring. It's interesting, too, to note, because the fact that they are not DOE employees, they tend to have some different organizational structures in how they operate. Many are set up as nonprofits, as 501c3s. We have one of our Clean Cities coalitions in Ohio that his business has grown. He actually has about a staff of about a dozen people that work for them. Other Clean Cities coalitions, many of them are housed in councils of governments, in COGs. Some are in energy offices. Some are housed in the American Lung Association. So they take on many different forms in terms of their organizational structure, but their mission at the end of the day is the same. And this is just a kind of a quick snapshot here of a couple of our coalitions. So we do have on our website, on the Clean Cities website, cleancities.energy.gov. You can go there and get a wealth of information, which I'll be sharing here in a couple more slides. But you can click on to a certain state and find out who your Clean Cities coordinator is, get a little snapshot on what's happening in that state in terms of number of alternative vehicles on the roads, stations, and that type of thing. And so this is for Chris Rice, who's our Maryland coordinator, Alan Harned, who runs the State of Virginia coalition, and this is Ron Flowers, who does the Greater Washington, D.C. coalition. So all of our coordinators are on there, again, with this bio of themselves and the coalition, and also a link to their own website. I mentioned that, you know, one of the things that we really try to do is to help educate, and we do that through a number of outreach and education mechanisms and other tools. And those are on the Clean Cities website, but we also have another website called the AFDC, the Alternative Fuel Data Center, and I'll touch on some of those tools in a few minutes. Also up there mentioned is a fuel economy guide, fueleconomy.gov, which is probably more popular for the retail consumer, but it allows a retail consumer, and fleets use it too, to go online, actually compare fuel economy of vehicles, to compare emissions ratings and that type of thing. So it's a good way to do some homework before making a vehicle purchase. One of the other things we also have, so like everybody else, we have a lot of stuff online, but we still believe that one of the things that's made the Clean City successful through the years is people doing business with people. And so we do have a technical response service where you can actually get in touch with a person and get an answer to a question. So if somebody's boss says, hey, I need to know something about this type of technology or this type of alternative fuel or about these laws or incentives, and he can easily find them on our website, we can probably get an answer for you pretty quick through our technical response service. These are some of the tools and publications that are on the AFDC, that Alternative Fuel Data Center, and I won't spend a lot of time in these. I'll just kind of call your attention to a couple of the more popular ones. The one of the more popular ones would be in the middle of the page here. Let me see if I get my arrow to work. The Alternative Fuel Data Center. Alternative Fuel Station Locator, that has a listing of every alternative fuel station in the country, EV chargers, compressed natural gas, liquefied natural gas, biofuels, propane, those are all listed on that website. And what that allows someone to do is to go on and they could plug in their address and say, okay, here's my business is located at this address at 123 ABC Street in Dayton, Ohio, and I want to know, and I'm thinking about natural gas, and how many natural gas stations are there within a 20-mile radius of my business, and that'll bring that up. Or if somebody wanted to map a trip and say, hey, is it possible for me to drive my propane vehicle from Richmond, Virginia to Newark, New Jersey, they could map out a out and find out. Or as many fleets do, as we have many of our bigger fleet stakeholders do, who really take advantage of using a public infrastructure as much as they can actually go onto that on a regular basis and do a complete download. So for example, AT&T today operates close to 6,000 natural gas vehicles, and with the exception of one station that they have in California, that all of those vehicles are fueled at public infrastructure. And so that it's up to them to really keep on top of what's happening out there in terms of new infrastructure coming on stream or that's planned. So they actually go onto our station locator every month and do a complete download of where all the new stations are at, so they can look at how that might impact their deployment. Let's see what else we have here. Laws of incentive search, this will give you a breakout of not only what incentives are happening at the federal level, but you can also do a state-by-state search. So if you have a fleet and you operate in a certain state or states and you've heard about, maybe there are incentives for EVs or for natural gas vehicles, you can actually go and do a state-by-state search, and you can really customize it. So if you want to know just about EVs or you want to know just about biofuels, you can customize your search. So that's one I'll call your attention to. And the last one, and this kind of gets into what you're going to hear more from Kevin and Keshav, is our petroleum reduction planning tool. And I think Keshav will back me up. As a fleet manager today, there are so many more choices for that fleet manager to use in terms of these alternative fuels and advanced technologies. So how do you figure out what's going to work best for you? And so this petroleum reduction planning tool, while it's not meant to give you an etched in granite roadmap, it does kind of help narrow the choices a little bit, because it allows a fleet manager to go in and kind of plug in their own metrics about their fleet if they have them. If not, it's already pre-populated with some data. But they can do some different what-if scenarios, going back to that slide I showed earlier of the different fuels and technologies. So a fleet manager might say, gosh, I know I have this segment of my fleet that does a lot of idling. What if I were to be able to introduce some auto reduction technology? What would that get me for fuel savings? Or I know I have a certain segment of my fleet that does a lot of stop and go. What would hybrids do for me? So again, this will help them kind of narrow that down a little bit. But we realize that oftentimes it takes a little bit more than that, and that's a lot of what Kevin does at NREL that you'll hear about during his presentation. And here's just some other publications we've done through the years. You can see we've got propane basics, natural gas basics. We actually have those for all the fuels. So if you're just looking for a quick primer, an overview of EVs or hybrids or propane or natural gas, you've got those. We have a guide to medium and heavy duty vehicles, alt fuel and advanced technologies. We have also a light duty vehicle buyer's guide. And we're working on, there's a lot happening with the conversion market for natural gas and propane vehicles, and there's CARB regulations and EPA regulations, and so we're working on a buyer's guide for that to try to help hopefully answer some of those questions and provide a good one-stop shopping resource that somebody can come to really understand what are the options and what do these CARB and EPA regulations mean, and how do you make sure that you're, if you're going to be converting vehicles, you're doing it so it meets all the various guidelines and regulations. We're very, as I mentioned earlier on, really like to promote the success of our stakeholders, and so for the last 12 years, we've had a very good working relationship with the folks at Motor Week. Motor Week is produced by Maryland Public TV. It's a weekly program shown on all the public TV stations throughout America, also shown on the, used to be the HD Net, it's now the Velocity Channel. And so we have a lot of these success stories of fleets and what they've been able to do. Those are highlighted on the Motor Week program, but those are also on our website. And again, you can go on and search those by market segments. So if you're interested in, what's happening at airports, or what's happening with long-haul trucking, or what about a specific fuel or technology, you can search those on our website as well. And it kind of, we think those really help, because I think it's, again, people like myself and Kevin can talk about a lot of this stuff, but if a fleet manager hears it from another fleet manager, then it tends to resonate and have a lot more credibility behind it sometimes. So this has been a real good tool for us to be able to help, promote the success of many of our stakeholders. Financial planning or financial assistance, financial planning is something that obviously we know is very important. That these vehicles have a higher incremental cost than their gasoline or diesel counterparts, and then there's how do you get in the necessary refueling or recharging infrastructure. So through the years, we've had competitive funding opportunities available to help again offset some of these costs. Unfortunately, the last couple years, with budgets being what they are, we've not been able to really fund anything on the vehicle or infrastructure side, but we've been able to do some planning things, and I'll talk about those in a second. This just shows you we were fortunate enough, as a lot of other folks were, to get some of the Reinvestment Recovery Act money, the ARRA funding, as we call it around here. So we funded 25 different projects throughout the country. and you can see those projects there. So it was diverse in terms of geography and also very diverse in terms of alternative fuels. This was some other funding that was done before the Recovery Act, again, just to show when we do have the money available, what we try to do to make sure we're getting the vehicles and the infrastructure out there. And this is just kind of a quick summary of what we're able to fund. So this is on the refueling infrastructure. You can see just shy of about 2,000 stations, including EV chargers. And in terms of vehicles, it was just over 9,000 vehicles that were able to get on the road as a result of the Recovery Act funding. So you can see we had CNGs, we had EVs, neighborhood electric vehicles, hybrids, LNG, kind of a little bit of everything. It's interesting, somebody asked me a question, I showed this slide not too long ago, somebody goes, well, gosh, you didn't have a lot of EVs, I'm really surprised it was so low. But keep in mind, when the Recovery Act funding was coming out, and that was almost 4 years ago, so again, there weren't a lot of choices out there then in terms of what was commercially ready to go as there were today. So I'm sure had these Recovery Act projects been funded today, you would see that EV number and probably the hybrid number be a little bit higher than they are. And these are just some recent awards. I mentioned the last couple of years we've not had enough money to really do anything we think meaningful enough on the vehicle and infrastructure side. So we've really tried to look at planning and community readiness and what do you need to happen to get some of the different barriers down, whether they're political barriers, market development barriers, code issues, safety training. And so that's what some of these awards for the last couple of years have been all about. And now this kind of really was going somewhere with this, and that's the National Clean Fleets Partnership. So Clean Fleets Partnership was started, it was announced by President Obama in April of 2011, so we're coming up on 2 years here. And this really came about because I show you that big map of the country that we're proud of with all the red dots where our coalitions are at. But as we would go and talk to large national fleets such as FedEx and others, kind of the thing, the response we'd almost get from all of them was, you know, that's great you have 100 Clean Cities coalitions. We don't have 100 fleet managers throughout the country. I mean, we may have fleet managers in those cities, but there are people who are not making decisions about fuels and vehicle deployments and replacements. You know, those are all done here at corporate, so how do we work with you guys? So we thought we needed a better mechanism to have these fleets work with us at Clean Cities, and so the National Clean Fleets Partnership was how that came about. But there are also a lot of other benefits to the National Clean Fleets Partnership as well. A number of things we think first and foremost is that these clean fleet partners, these national fleets that have made these commitments through the last couple of years to make meaningful deployments of these vehicles and not just do demonstration projects, really serve as pace setters, as Dennis Smith, my colleague, likes to call them. So they really help demonstrate to other fleets, whether it's their large national counterparts, whether it's a regional fleet or a local fleet, that, you know, these things might just work. If a FedEx can use it, if an AT&T can use them in their fleet, maybe there's a way for it to work for me. So hopefully it helps demonstrate that and demonstrates that there can be a business case for it. And we think it also helps, too, with getting the necessary refueling or recharging infrastructure in. You know, oftentimes with alternative fuels, you get into this chicken and egg argument. But if you can get some of the bigger fleets that will help get some of that infrastructure in, then it maybe does make it a little bit easier for some of the local or regional fleets to come behind and deploy the vehicles and take advantage of using some of that infrastructure. A lot of things we can do with having, you know, big fleets with the power of a lot of big numbers behind them in terms of number of vehicles. A couple of things we're looking at is really looking at things like R&D and consolidated vehicle sales. Not that the Department of Energy can get involved with purchasing vehicles and negotiating contracts with the OEMs, but to the extent that we can help bring the fleets together and everybody can understand that, gosh, you know, the same platform that PG&E uses on some of their lift trucks are the same ones that AT&T and Verizon are using. And so maybe they, by getting those folks together, they can demonstrate to an OEM or an engine manufacturer that there is a need and a business case to offer that vehicle with a certain type of alternative fuel or a certain type of technology. I mentioned the infrastructure development, and we've seen that happen quite a bit already where we have a number of the large national fleets are using public infrastructure where they can. Many of them will say, you know, like AT&T, that we're in the telecom business and not in the business of building infrastructure. So to the extent that they can really take advantage advantage of a lot of the existing infrastructure that's out there, or help, again, build that business case for new, for somebody to build a new infrastructure, knowing that many of these fleets will use it, is really helping to drive the market, and again, to help get more of the other fleets to follow along. One of the things that we're proud of with not only our online tools, but also, again, this kind of leads in what Kevin is going to be talking about, is the technical assistance through the national labs. And so we do that, again, not only with what you saw from the AFDC site, but we also have a number of kind of industry experts that we can help bring in to assess a problem. And then we also have the ability to do some of the things that Kevin will talk about with some of the drive cycle and duty cycle analysis. So a lot of what we can do too is really is hands-on as well, and really understanding that, you know, the challenges that might face one fleet are different than those that face another fleet. So it's really about kind of being able to kind of customize our approach so that we're working with these national partners to really understand, you know, what their deployment plans are, what their petroleum reduction plans are, and what some of the challenges or roadblocks they're facing that we might be able to help them with. And so this is the list of the national partners we have. We're up to 20 national partners. This is a program we've tried to really be careful on how we grow, from the standpoint, again, that we want to make sure that we're able to really kind of provide the hands-on assistance and really be able to understand what they're doing, and again, as best we can, bring our resources to bear to help out. So it's not, as I call it, a subscription program where somebody just goes online and signs up and we send them some Clean Cities decals to put on their truck. It's really about being able to work with them one-on-one and understanding what their challenges are and being able to help them meet those challenges. This kind of follows along with some of the technical and problem-solving assistance. I think this one got out of order a little bit. But again, it goes back to some of the things we try to do at Queen Cities to address technical issues, whether it's, you know, permitting safety issues, addressing chronic issues you might see in the field with either vehicles or stations or recharging equipment or that type of thing. So again, that kind of ties into what we do with our labs and a lot of the industry experts we can bring in to help out with those things. And finally, that is it. I'll wrap it up. I know we've got a lot to cover. This is my contact information. These are links to some of the sites and resources I mentioned earlier in my presentation. So with that, Nick, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Mark. We will now begin our second presentation from Kevin Walkowitz with the National Renewable Energy Lab. And Kevin, I'll bring up your presentation, and when you are ready, you can get started.
Okay. Thank you, Nicholas. As Mark just talked about, there's a lot of DOE activities that can be helpful to the National Clean Fleet Partners, but three areas that might be beneficial from my perspective and I'm going to talk about today are field testing, the data collection analysis, and then the tools and data being developed by the national labs. These activities drill down a little bit deeper than some of the tools that Mark discussed and are meant to obtain and characterize information and data for the fleets at a more detailed level. There are some of these activities happening at other national labs, such as Argonne National Lab and Oak Ridge National Lab and even Idaho National Lab, but I'm mostly about activities at NREL, as we're the primary DOE lab for medium and heavy-duty fleet activities. For the medium and heavy duty field testing and evaluation efforts, we've historically looked at a lot of different options and have published a lot of case studies, including case studies on LNG, CNG, and B20 fuel vehicles. More recently, we've completed or engaged in field studies for electric vehicles, electric hybrids, and hydraulic hybrids. And most of these studies look at fuel consumption differences between new and existing technologies and try to understand the differences. Also looking at emissions differences, maintenance and operational costs, as well as reliability. And I think these are true for all the case studies that we conduct. We look at those areas. Information on all these types of studies can be found on the web. I think there's maybe 12 or 15 of them up there right now. I can give you the long URL, or you can just kind of Google NREL fleet, and it should pop up, and it'll take you right to the fleet evaluation section. So as part of these studies, we also dig a little deeper into understanding battery life and looking more closely at some of the EV deployment issues and trying to understand what it takes to deploy large numbers of EVs in one location. But for all these studies, the National Clean Fleet partner fleets are prime candidates, as they all have significant operations and are investing in many of the same technologies that DOE is funding or interested in. The medium-duty and heavy-duty collection and analysis activity is primarily focused on capturing and reporting data on projects that were funded and deployed by the Recovery Act funds. Mark mentioned the Clean Cities Recovery Act funding. I'll be talking about some of the data that we're collecting from Smith, Navistar, Cascade, Sierra, and these were funded under the Transportation Electrification Grant or Recovery Act funds, which was a different solicitation than the Clean Cities. The last thing I want to discuss today was some of the tools that are available to the fleets, and they were developed to help understand the data that's out there or data on a specific fleet and how it might help make some calculated decisions for that fleet. So the first example of some of the field testing, the first part that I want to talk about was a study that we completed with UPS on their hybrid electric delivery vans. This report was published last year and basically talks about the Eaton hybrid electric propulsion system. It was built into the UPS delivery vans. And we did an 18-month study which looked at fuel economy and maintenance records. We also got data off the engine control unit, including miles, fuel consumed, percent idle time. We also looked at DPF regenerations. We were able to look at some GPS route data logging, and then we also brought the vehicles in and tested them on our chassis dynamometer, which is called Refuel. So again, these are, we looked at 11 hybrids versus 11 conventionals, both of the same model year, and we looked at these in Minneapolis. So just to give an example of the type of information that we try to get out of these studies and relay back to some of the fleet managers. A lot of our effort is focused on how the vehicles are being used. So the usage and looking at how to select laboratory test cycles. You can kind of see in these two charts the variation that we observed in this one location. And trying to understand this variation in the on-road behavior will provide a good understanding of which test cycles to use. In these charts, each individual dot here is an operational day of the vehicle, and then the black larger shapes are the test cycles that we selected. And we usually look at about five different metrics to select these test cycles. In these examples I'm just showing, we used average driving speed, kinetic intensity, and number of stops per mile. But we're able to look at it in a lot of different ways and help the fleet understand what's the right test cycle to be looking at for their application. So once we've kind of thoroughly documented and analyzed the usage, we try to bring the vehicles into the laboratory and look at the differences between the new vehicle and an old vehicle in a controlled laboratory setting. In this slide, the trucks we studied were tested on three cycles chosen from the data I just showed you. You can kind of see the results on these three cycles, the hybrid advantage over the old vehicle, and you can kind of see the variation that you might expect from that data that we saw. We look at that both on a ton mile per gallon basis and also on just a pure miles per gallon basis. Just to mention this, I think the on-road results during our 18-month study were showed about a 20% average improvement. But you can read the full report again on our website if you're interested. The next example, and Keshav might talk about this a little bit more, was the work that we did with FedEx on their HEV box trucks and delivery vans. The box trucks shown in the upper left there had the same Eaton hybrid system as the UPS delivery vans, and then the HEV the FedEx delivery vans had a gasoline-equipped three-way catalyst, Azure hybrid system installed in them. And the interest in these gasoline hybrids was to look at the emissions versus efficiency trade-offs. Obviously, the gasoline engine was hoped to be a little bit cleaner, but the efficiency difference was a concern, so we wanted to see how those things balanced out. For the box trucks, we were mainly interested in learning how the Eaton hybrid system performed in a heavier weight class and working in a different duty cycle than the UPS delivery vans. So for the box trucks, we tested the two different vehicles, again, in the laboratory. As expected, the hybrid showed a variation in hybrid benefits, primarily driven by the difference in driving cycles or duty cycles, up to a 31% improvement in the city cycle, and then not a big difference when tested on a cycle that represented the most predominantly highway cycle that we saw in use for these vehicles. And again, these cycles were chosen based on how we observed the vehicles being used in the field. We also dig a little bit deeper into the on-road observations and on-road measurements that we make and try to look at how fuel economy is affected by everyday driving. Here you can kind of see the range of driving speed versus fuel economy for both sets of vehicles, the hybrids in red and the conventionals in blue. But again, you have to, I think we want to look at this in a couple different ways in order to fully understand the performance of the vehicles and be able to provide some of this information back to some of the National Clean Fleet partner fleets. Looking at the FedEx delivery vans, we are able to select three cycles, again, based on observations in the fields. And here you can kind of see that these three cycles and their kinetic intensity, which we use quite often, it's a measure of speed and acceleration. But again, not a lot of benefit for the hybrids down on the less urban cycles. A little bit of benefit here out on the New York City cycle. But again, keep in mind this vehicle was a gasoline hybrid versus a diesel conventional. So the efficiency differences in the engine probably were made up somewhat by the hybrid system, but only in the most urban of the cycles. And this gray area kind of shows where we observe the vehicles operating in the field, and you can see maybe what the potential difference is. And I think during our study period, the infield results showed not really a statistically significant difference in fuel economy. So trying to understand where those how those vehicles operate in different environments and on different duty cycles. You can kind of understand what the best application for that vehicle might be. But one, as I mentioned, one thing of interest on this study was really the emissions benefits for these vehicles. They were deployed in Southern California, so emissions were of high interest. And you can see that any loss of efficiency from using the gasoline engine was replaced by a large improvement in emissions for NOx, CO, total hydrocarbon and PM on all the cycles. So there's always a trade-off and benefits with a lot of the options that the fleets are looking at. Our approach on all these case studies is to try to tell the whole story for fuel economy, emissions, reliability, and total operating costs. Another example, one new study that we're just kicking off right now is looking at hydraulic hybrids in the UPS fleet. This is a technology that is of interest to many of the National Clean Fleet partner fleets, but we'll be looking at 20 hydraulic hybrids versus 20 conventionals and trying to run them on similar routes to avoid having to switch the routes around. But again, it'll follow our standard protocol of gathering fuel economy and maintenance records on all the vehicles, engine, ECU, and image data on a monthly basis, doing some dynamometer testing, and then analyzing on a monthly basis service records, warranty, driver logs, downtime availability, and also road calls and what some of the reasons for those road calls were. So, but again, trying to paint a total picture of how those vehicles operate, what they're costing, and what some of the issues are. So another new evaluation we're kicking off as a case study to look at the Smith electric vehicles that are being deployed by Frito-Lay, and really try to understand at a depot level how they're functioning compared to the existing vehicles. So this will be a case study, hopefully at two different distribution centers, we'll compare the EVs versus some comparable 2010 diesels, and this study will focus on installation experience, you know, what it took to get those vehicles into use, overall cost, again, conventionals versus EVs, try to do some in-field battery testing to understand battery degradation and range issues, and then looking at use patterns, and then also maybe gathering some information to understand vehicle-to-building opportunities, which might start to look at some of the demand charge issues. I think Shop might be talking about that a little bit more in detail. And then just looking at how the vehicles are affecting the grid and integrating with the grid and showing the effects of, you know, plugging large batteries on multiple vehicles at one location at the same time into the grid. So I mentioned the battery life prediction. I thought I'd mention this again, but a lot of the fleets with these EV deployments are really interested in how the batteries are going to degrade over time. There's a few life models that are developed from both battery manufacturers and some of the vehicle manufacturers, as well as the national labs. But the models are pretty general, and what we're trying to do is feed it some specific information to try to refine those models for a particular application or deployment. I won't get into these charts, but these just kind of show two of the main drivers might be temperature, and the different degradation curves are shown here for different temperature applications, and also depth of discharge is a big factor in how long your batteries last. So if you go in and look at some of these case studies and try to measure those things, we can plug that back into the model and really help fleets understand whether their battery is going to last whatever it is they advertised, or more or less than that. The Recovery Act data analysis that we're doing, I wanted to mention, a lot of the National Clean Fleet partners are involved with this, and these, again, are part of the Transportation Electrification Grant. There were four awards in the medium and heavy-duty truck area, Smith, Navistar, South Coast, and Cascade Sierra. I'll just mention two of them that I thought were relevant to the seminar, the Smith and the Cascade. Typically we're collecting data on every truck, every minute, or in this case every second that they're being operated. We're collecting about 30 channels of data, and we're producing these data analysis products based on that data that we're collecting. Quarterly reports we'll be publishing on all these to try to help inform other fleets that are either using or considering using these vehicles. And again, these are found on our website, published on a quarterly basis. So the first example of this work is the Smith vehicles. There's going to be 500 of these trucks deployed throughout the U.S. Over 300 of them are on the road already today, but some of the partners that are using these trucks include many of the National Clean Fleet partners, Frito-Lay, Coca-Cola, Staples, FedEx, are all using these trucks. And what we're trying to do is aggregate the data from all 500 of these vehicles eventually, publish them. There's about this publication shown here. It's a four-page document that we put out, a lot of the usage metrics and then some of the analysis of some of the data. And again, these can all be found on our website. The other project from the Transportation Electrification I thought was relevant was the Cascade Sierra project. They are installing truck stop electrification pedestals at as many as 50 sites around the country. They're also deploying rebates. Rebates to up to 5,000 users, looking at a number of different types of hardware for idle reduction purposes. So again, we'll be collecting data from the users and from the sites, and trying to tally that up and looking at how they're being used, how much energy is being used, or how much fuel is being saved, greenhouse gases avoided, you know, when, what time the charging stations or the electrification stations are being used. And we just started collecting this data. We're hoping to get the first report out probably in March. But again, just trying to inform users and some of the fleets that are out there maybe considering this technology. So real quick, a couple of the tools that we've developed to help OEMs and fleets understand the big picture. One of them is called Fleet DNA. So it's a DOE-funded online tool developed by NREL in partnership with Oak Ridge National Labs. And it's going to help compile all the medium and heavy-duty truck usage metrics from a variety of sources and suppliers. Phase one will be out in the next week or so, and that's just kind of a pre-sorted data set. You can click on what kind of truck you want to know about, and it shows the analysis that we've done on those data sets. And then phase two is the more customizable sorting function. You can pick what types of trucks you want to include in your data set, and then you can plot it a number of different ways depending on what you want on which axis. So that should be out in the next couple months. So some of the benefits for this Fleet DNA tool, and some of the National Clean Fleet partner fleets will be contributing data to this, and hopefully some will be using it to understand their operations and see how they compare to the national averages. But OEMs hopefully will use this to understand their customer use profile. Funding agencies might use it to understand how the vehicles are being used and what some of the impact of their financial incentives might be. And then researchers can use this as a source of data for modeling and simulation. Kind of a real brief overview of the data that we have and are hoping to get. This box here is kind of data that we have already, and we're hoping to get into phase one rollout. These two boxes, we have some of this now. We're just still sorting it out, and we hope to get that up soon. And then we hope to gather more information on these types of vehicles in the near future. But our priorities are really fuel consumption and payback, you know, if they have a good chance at ROI, return on investment success. And even if they don't, if they're scalable or transferable, we'd still be interested in gathering data for those types of vehicles. Another tool I thought I'd mention real quick is it's called Drive, and we've used this on all of our projects that I've just talked about, and it is available on our website for fleets to use. It hopefully lets a fleet manager input their specific data and then provides over 150 different metrics on that data set, histograms, scatter plots, can create custom cycles, and it can recommend standard cycles that are out there right now or tell you what standard cycle your data most likely looks like. So it tries to take a lot of the guesswork out of how to analyze and create cycles. The last tool that I wanted to mention is called FastSim, and there's a lot of simulation tools out there right now. Autonomy was developed by Argonne National Lab and DOE, which is a really great simulation tool. There's also a couple other private products out there. But we developed FastSim to kind of help out specifically for some of our fleet studies. And it runs in Excel, and it can quickly run through many different drive cycles or all those little points I showed earlier that are days of operation. So you can run through each day of operation and look at all the what-if scenarios associated with deploying technology. Different technology on specific routes or different truck types. Again, it helps understand the effect of the variability that you might see in your fleet and different types of trucks and the expected performance of some of the different technologies. So it can tell you like the effect of mass on fuel economy for your application or maybe some of the aerodynamic improvements, what that would do for your application, or even look at, say, EV versus diesel behavior for the different days of operation that you might have. So I think the last slide I have here is just an example of what we've done with one of the National Clean Fleet partners, Verizon, and just trying to help, just trying to bring together everything I've just talked about with some of the tools and capabilities that we have, try to give a quick assessment to them and to identify the best technology for their application. So we went in and gathered data from 40 of their light aerial boom trucks, and then I think maybe 30 or 40 of their Class 3 service vans operating in three different locations. And we produce some analysis and metrics to help them kind of strategically deploy the vehicles in their fleet that they are interested in, some of the new technologies. And we are able to provide recommended drive cycles for further analysis and testing. We're hoping that all this data can be used with FastSim to maybe look at some of the different technologies that they're interested in and be able to assess those on the actual drive cycles that we observed during the study. So I think that's all I have. That's kind of a brief summary of the projects and tools that we're hoping to use in collaboration with the National Clean Fleet Partners. If you have any questions, please let me know or feel free to get in touch with me at that email address listed here, and I'd be happy to talk with you more.
All right. Thank you, Kevin. We will now begin our final presentation by Keshav Sandhi with the FedEx Express. And Keshav, I'll bring up your presentation, and when you are ready, you may begin.
Hello, thank you, Nick. Again, thank you all for attending this webinar, and also thanks to Carl and Mark for inviting FedEx to this webinar. As the slide indicates, my name is Keshav Sonley. I'm the manager for Asset Management Group at FedEx Express, and I'm responsible for the total life cycle of vehicles as well as aircraft ground support equipment. Start with a little bio on FedEx as a corporation. FedEx, the Express segment, was founded in 1971. Our most recent revenues are $42 billion, and we ship about 8.5 to 9 million packages and parcels each day. We serve 220 countries, and we have more than 290,000 team members. Our total fleet, the aircraft fleet, is about 700 aircraft, and we have about 90,000 motorized vehicles. The org chart on the left indicates the holding corporation FedEx Corp in the middle, and in the annular ring or the donut ring on the outskirts, you have all the subsidiaries. I represent FedEx Express, and FedEx Express, the block on the top, we are the world's largest express delivery company. FedEx is a transportation company, and in the process of transporting stuff or delivering packages and parcels, we use energy, I would say quite a bit of energy. And just like every other large logistical corporations, be the postal networks or any other logistical networks, the total annular miles are covered by fleets of these scales are about a billion or more. So we do cover a lot of miles, and the concept of environmental and energy security is certainly of prime importance to us. Our mantra is to connect the world responsibly and resourcefully. And the dependence on foreign oil certainly threatens the national as well as economic security. And the oil price shocks as well as the delivery network shocks certainly wreak havoc on the economy. Just this morning, I got the EIA notification email that diesel today is at its highest price as it was in the last 5 years. So we're back up again, and we're in the highest per gallon, dollars per gallon, in the last 5 years. So the other thing is our dependence on oil-producing nations really distorts our foreign policy. And the transportation sector, which includes us and other delivery networks, we consume 70% of the total oil in the U.S. As an environmental and economic metric, we monitor our fuel consumption aggressively. And to that end, we came up with a specific goal. We monitored all the fuel that we use, and we came up with a goal in 2008 to improve the fuel efficiency of our vehicle fleet by 20% by the year 2020. And we're also a part of the National Clean Fleets Partnership. This talks about how we're going about, and again, as I said, we rely on energy, we rely on quite a bit of energy. How do we ensure that we use the most optimal energy source today and also create a pathway for the future? So we look at it into two facets. One of it, how do we use the existing technology the best way we can? I'll try to get the cursor. That's how do we best use existing technology while at the same time keeping an eye on the future and working towards future power plants, energy sources, there's always that better and never the best equipment available, but there's always this chance for improvement. But how do we not forget about today and really use what we use in the most efficient mechanism? And that's where I think the biggest bang for a buck for a fleet like ours comes about, using the existing technology. And that's what we've done. And using today's technologies accords us the advantage of reducing fuel consumption by tens of millions of gallons annually. And the way we do it, I'll explain more later, it's basically identifying what do we do, what kind of a work do we do, and right size the tool. A truck is a tool for us. It's a tool for one of our delivery agents to pick up the packages and deliver. How do we optimize on that truck, on that tool? And that's a big segment of how we do it and how we've improved the fuel economy of a fleet in the last few years. A brief timeline of the FedEx history. FedEx, as I said, is a fairly nascent organization, started in 71, so just about 40 years old. And right from the beginning, we are a transportation company, use energy, quite a bit of energy. So we're always looking for how can we use this the best way we can. Primarily, all we're doing is rolling those wheels on asphalt, on concrete and all. How do we roll those wheels in the most efficient and economical way? To that end, one of the biggest tests that we did was in 1992. It lasted up to 1994. We compared all different kinds of fuels, technologies, powertrains that were available at that time. And that included the natural gas vehicles, LPG propane vehicles. We also had EVs at that time. They were lead acid battery vehicles, but we had EVs. And we also tested reformulated gasoline, which is today's contemporary gasoline. But when we did this test, we compared 200 trucks in the LA area and try to identify what kind of an energy source and what kind of a driveline gives us the best and the most efficient mechanism to really roll those tires on a roadway. The highlight of that observation was truly that electric drivelines, electric motors, powering wheels are basically the most efficient mechanism. You put an energy into that, and it'll churn out 85 to 95% of the energy into the wheels. Whereas if you go other paths, whether it be the natural gases or the conventional engines, you're down to the 20, 25, maybe 30% range. So electric motors certainly have the biggest advantage of converting whatever energy source, whether it be battery electric vehicles or whether it be fuel cells of the future, that electric motor accords us the biggest bang for the buck. And most of our efforts, a lot of our efforts, have been in how do we incorporate that electric motor into this driveline, be it a blended scenario or a complete holistic scenario, be it a hybridized or be a complete battery electric vehicle kind of a thing, or even a fuel cell. So those are a lot of our efforts that we've sustained and been doing through. One of the things that I started to mention about is the highest potential opportunity for fleet, whether it be us or any other fleet, is really identifying what works and what kind of an equipment you need for each individualized drive cycle. And there will be some more charts later on. But basically, if you look at the top left side, that's the FedEx iconic FedEx truck. And a lot of parcel delivery companies also use this kind of an iconic truck. It has its advantages, and at the same time, it requires quite a bit of energy to pull this truck. So one of the things when we started looking at fuel efficiency diligently down to the gallon that we operate, we created different mathematical models and created all different kinds of scenarios and heuristics, trying to understand we have a fleet. We had a fleet at that point in time. And as this fleet comes of an age for replacement cycles, what do we replace it with? Are we going to buy the same truck all over again, or is there something else we could do differently? And those math models came up and started giving us all those indicators of what needs to be done, given what fuel is, given what drive cycles we operate, and where do we use what kind of a vehicle. And this chart is a very simplistic representation of what those math models told us. It says those big 700, 900 cubic feet trucks with GVWs of 14 to 19,000 pounds, they are required. They are absolutely required, but they're required on certain drive cycles. And in a lot of other drive cycles, you don't need the utility of that vehicle. So what we started doing is as we went through a replenishment cycle, we started identifying at the route level, what do we need to buy? And the subsequent tens of thousands of trucks that we have bought and deployed have been targeted towards specific routes that we'll be operating them on. And that is what has given us the biggest bang for the buck. The iconic FedEx truck is up on the left-hand side over there with the hybridized drivetrain and also the EVs. These are urban drive cycles. The cycles on the left-hand side are the urban drive cycles. And then on the extended routes where we're driving 50, 60,000 miles a year or a couple of hundred to 300, 400 miles a day, there's an inverse proportionality of how many packages can we really carry when we are delivering these extended routes. So right-sizing the engine, the power plant, and also the box size is what has given us the biggest bang for the buck. The topics, again, briefly I'll talk about how does a fleet go about identifying what their duty cycles are. And again, it's a power and energy requirement. What am I going to do? What kind of a work am I doing? What is the utility? How many pounds of stuff am I carrying? How many cubic feet do I need in the back of the truck? So those analytics, those are very important. Those are the primary things that a fleet really needs to start looking at, even before looking into all the alternatives. Because we could have the best fuel availability and pricing on fuel, but if we start sub-optimizing the drivelines, we're going back to really against the principles of conservation. So one of the first segments is really right-sizing. What am I doing? Identifying at the route level, what do I need to do? And subsequent to that, we'll really talk about what kind of fuel do we need, what kind of engine do we need, and all those kinds of things. And that's why the first one is about power and those duty cycle requirements. Then we go into the fuels, energy sources, and what kind of a driveline we need to use. Again, the primary driver for this power energy discussion is conservation. Irrespective of the fuel we use, what do we need to haul that stuff in our duty cycle? Whether it be natural gas, whether it be diesel today, or whether it be electric motors, if we have a sub-optimized driveline, it really goes against the principles of trying to optimize a fleet. So the first discussion is truly how much do we need to carry and where do we carry it? What are the gradient levels that we drive upon? So we work with the national laboratories, we work with engineering firms, we work ourselves to really identify at the truck level, at the route level, what are we hauling? And that makes the biggest difference. This basically tells us, shows a representation of all the instrumentation, all the data collected, and Kevin also showed some similar charts from the NREL analytics. This is just a route profile and the speed velocity profile of a typical truck in Manhattan. How many kilometers per hour was it doing? Where was it traveling? How many stops? How many accelerations? How many decelerations? What kind of a capability do we need? What kind of limitations of the individual, whether it be the electric motors, whether it be conventional motors and transmissions, where do these existing ones cap out, and what do we need to do to get into something different? The advantage is that FedEx as a company can drive a market. Because of tens of thousands of units that we have in a fleet, we think it suddenly gives us the advantage, and it's also our responsibility to be able to drive a market, to create a need and a market for more optimized solutions. And that's been the core functionality of most of the asset management principles that we've been doing in the last 7 to 8 years, creating a market for more optimized solutions. Duty cycles, you also saw some of these duty cycles under the end of the presentation. Where does the chart in the middle is a FedEx New York City duty cycle? How does it compare versus other standard duty cycles, the UDDS or the Manhattan, all those kinds of things? How does the FedEx cycle compare? And gives us a good portfolio of what kind of engines should we be operating with and what kind of transmissions, all those kinds of things. Having obtained a very good understanding of how our trucks, all those tens of thousands of trucks, are operating on a daily basis in and out, we set about saying, okay, now what can we do to make it better? We certainly need a numeric index. We need a metric to know what we're doing today and where can we go from here. So we set out in 2008 and created a metric saying we'll improve the fuel economy of our fleet by 20% from 2020. The benchmark we took was 2005 when we started all the major portion of these analytics. So from 2005 to 2020, our target was to improve the fuel efficiency of the fleet 20% by 2020. As of about a year ago, we had already achieved 16.6. So in less than half of the time that we gave ourselves, we have accomplished more than 80% of our target. And at this point in time, we will be most likely reevaluating the 2020 goal and see what can we do. We have achieved this, and there's certainly more benefits we can now that we know how we perform, now that we know at the route level what happens. So that gives us the advantage of maybe there's an opportunity to do something more now. The optimization of the conventional fuel, as I mentioned, is really worth a lot. While there's certainly technologies, and we would like to continue to be the market leader in creating a need, deploying alternative technologies, and creating a vision for energy and energy security in the future. But at the same time, conventional fuels are still quite a bit of the chunk of fuel that we use. About 80% of the miles that we operate today are not really much conducive to alternative vehicles. Primarily, the hybrids work really good in urban, dense, stop-and-go environments. Our miles are not coming. Those 80% are coming from somewhere else. So how do we optimize on that 80%, the biggest portion of our miles? How do we optimize? And conventional fuels in the near future are certainly going to be a big part of that. Diesel is still the mainstay and the primary fuel for the suburban and extended routes where we're driving a lot and a lot of miles. So how do we squeeze every mile out of every gallon that we have? And that's where the biggest bang has been for us, tens of millions of gallons saved annually. One of the things, again, goes back to the slide that we showed about right vehicle, right route. In dense urban environments where we have lots of package volume, lots of stuff, a few stops, we do need the cubic capacity and the size of the vehicle. But as we start hitting the highway and we start delivering in cycles, which are what we call the suburban and the extended ones, it's inverse proportionality. So one of the things that we work was trying to bring these Eurovan kind of vehicles into the U.S. It started off with one offering, and now we have multiple, up to three different manufacturers bringing these kinds of vehicles. They suddenly have a shorter life than the traditional walk-in step vans that we've been accustomed to. But the advantages, the fuel advantages, the powertrain advantages, those certainly outweigh most of the gains that we had from longer life vehicles kind of a thing. Having 100% better fuel economy when fuel is $4.17, suddenly those pros outweigh all the cons that we had, especially in those particularly identified route cycles. And we work with different OEMs and also different drivetrains within the same OEM to, again, optimize at that route level. In some cases, we could be okay with a 3-liter. In some of the cases, we'd like to have a sub-3-liter diesel engine. And we've had extensive experience with these kinds of vehicles in the global marketplace. As a global operator, we have, again, those tens of thousands of vehicles operating globally. It has given us the understanding and the learning and the data we know from them, how we can operate and where we can operate. And most of the U.S. manufacturers who are bringing these here now are based upon those European or international models. The iconic FedEx truck, the W700, that we call it, it's primarily between that 16,000, 19,000 pound GVW truck, can haul about 6,000 pounds. The one distinct disadvantage that had is most of the manufacturers in those category of vehicles stick 6 to 7 liter diesel engines. So having an engine power plant that can give you 200, 250 horsepower and about 3 to 350 pound feet of torque, that was, again, based upon our assessment, our duty cycles, was just way too much. So one of the alternatives as a replenishment or replacement cycle is identifying how much power torque do I really need to haul even that urban big 700 cubic feet truck that can haul about 4,000 or 5,000 pounds. The answer came in the shape right now. It's available as the Isuzu Utilimaster Reach vehicle. It has a 3-liter engine and provides enough capability to be able to haul what we do. And that has enabled us to scale away and get 35 to 40% better fuel economy than those traditional vehicles. It gives the same utility. It certainly has more to it than just the engine. It has composite panels. But it's really the shiny point, the thing that makes it stand out truly, is that optimized 3-liter diesel engine that gives us the advantage of getting that 35 to 40% better fuel economy while maintaining the same utility. So understanding as we're going through our replacement cycles, we know a fleet has to be replaced at a certain pattern. What are the vehicles that will substitute them with. And this is a good example of having an opportunity to replace some of those iconic old diesel trucks with something that gives us a better fuel economy. We certainly work with the hybrids, and we've had a share of the FCC Edens, we've had the Azures, the Iveco hybrids. I'll pass through these rather quickly because I think we have less than 15 minutes left. One of the evaluations that Kevin was talking about was the NREL evaluation on the FCC M2 hybrid. This is the same vehicle, and he talked also about the driveline. The driveline on this vehicle is, on this 32,000-pound vehicle, is the same driveline that's also in the 14,000 to 19,000-pound hybrids. But having the ability to scale it up into this is of particular interest to us. Having the ability to scale that 6-plus-liter engine and have about 60 kilowatt of electric motor hauling this 32,000 pounds is certainly of great interest to us, and that's what we're trying to evaluate. How can we benchmark it against the conventional straight truck that we have in the fleet, and under urban driving conditions, what are the benefits we gain? Electric vehicles, as I said, the electric vehicles, it was clear in the beginning, it's still clear to us that the electric motor accords great advantages. Just how do we go about doing it? Taking a few steps back and looking at the entire project and understanding what needs to happen to make electric vehicles more mainstream, what we understood was we certainly need to have great vehicles providing the utility, the reliability of conventional vehicles, but at the same time, we also need to develop the entire ecosystem. The electric vehicles will need chargers, we'll have to work with our FedEx safety groups, the properties group, technology services, all those kinds of things. So we segregated our EV program into two distinct major programs. On the left-hand side, we're trying to assist in the development of the truck and the truck technology itself. On the right-hand side is how do we get those trucks charged in the best shape fashion that we can. And I'll have some more details about that shortly. The EV testing, in order to assist in the development of the trucks and the technology itself, we have trucks from almost every major manufacturer produced in the U.S. and also quite a few global locations also. So almost every major manufacturer's electric vehicle is in our fleet, and we are evaluating those trucks. We're benchmarking those trucks against each other, and at the same time also benchmarking them against today's diesel trucks to identify how are those trucks competing amongst each other, what are the pros and cons, and also how are they competing against a diesel that's available today, say a 2010 reach kind of a vehicle. So what needs to do to accelerate the development of the EV truck and the technology? And we have two specific programs. One is with Argonne in Chicago, Argonne National Laboratories, and the other one with CalStart CalHeat in Southern California. The trucks that we're testing include the Navistar E-Star, the FCC E-Cell, the Smith Newton. We'll have some of these bolder tests, but this truck is not part of the evaluation that we're doing, but we'll have some bolder EVs in the state of Texas shortly. In global locations, we have Smith Edison vehicles. We have these vehicles in Hong Kong, in Germany, and Italy. And in Hong Kong, we were the first package courier company to be using EVs for delivery purposes. The other major global OEM that we worked with in providing with drive cycles, optimization of EVs for those drive cycles is Nissan. This is the Nissan NV200 or ENV200. We've tested this vehicle and provided our feedback in the UK, in Japan, and shortly in Brazil, US. We'll bring it to US also. The whole idea is the concept is to use existing technology. It is patterned upon the Leaf driveline. How can it be used for smaller delivery cycles? Another program that we have with the EV technology is retrofitting existing vehicles. We have these robust chassis with bodies which have a fairly significant longevity. The only thing that could actually fail could be things like mechanical failures of engines, transmissions, and all. But given the geographic locations where corrosion is not an issue, the chassis and the body could last years, maybe decades. So is there a chance that we recycle some of these bodies and the chassis in geographical locations which don't have fatigue failures or corrosion failures, take those at the end of one or two driveline failures, and let's convert them into an EV? What does it take? Would it help jumpstart the EV industry? And that's what we're trying to do under this program. And what we're trying to do at this point in time is to create a bill of materials, for one, to understand what will it take to do that. And once we get that, the next phase will be, how do we make those economics work? So stage one is, what does it take? Get that bill of materials. What components do we need? What kind of a harness change do we need? Once that's out of the way, the next phase is, how do we make it economical, if we can? And we're working on this project with two different manufacturers. Talking about the ecosystem development, charging, as Kevin also mentioned about charging of EVs, each one of these trucks could be anywhere from 6 to 10 kilowatts, the scale of a typical suburban house in the U.S. So when it's charging, it's drawing about 6 to 10 kilowatts. A typical FedEx station in an urban environment could have 100 to 200 trucks. If we were to bring these EVs into that station, because urban environments, EVs work really great, and urban environments, FedEx station is 100 to 200 trucks. So if we were to say, for instance, in Manhattan, that station, one of the stations, WTCA, would be all electric trucks. So having 100 to 200 trucks at one station charging at one given point in time could be a megawatt, in some cases even more, of electricity. How do we manage that load? And that's the program that we have in partnership with General Electric, Columbia University, and Con Edison, trying to understand, how do we manage that load? Right now, the EV loads are binary on and off. You plug it in, it starts off, it starts charging, just like an electric iron kind of a thing, or turning on a light bulb. But how can we make it more intelligent and say, based upon the duty cycle of that truck, that particular truck, how many miles it's going to be driving, what is the grid status right now? Can the grid accord to give us a megawatt or not? So based upon those drive cycles and all those external influences, can we make this charging more intelligent? Can we turn off a charging for a truck which does not need to have 52 kilowatt hours charged tomorrow? Let's charge that truck at 5 amps versus another truck charging at 40 amps. So getting that intelligence built in, and that's the program that we've been working for. It's almost 2 years, and we've collected data for, I think, more than a year now, and some great learnings. We've learned a lot, and it has kind of emboldened us to do more and more, and this understanding really helps us facilitate a larger deployment. Because what we used to do was, we had a glass ceiling. We weren't comfortable deploying more than 10% of the fleet as EVs in an urban station. So if we had 100 trucks at a station, we were not comfortable doing more than 10 trucks at that station. And the reason is explained in this graph over here. The graph, the x-axis is the hour of the day. So midnight is the point zero on the x-axis. And then 24 is 11:59 p.m. at night. The y-axis is the current being drawn into that facility, be it for EVs or any other reasons. That's all the current drawn inside the facility for lights, HVAC, conveyors, all those equipment running. The valley of our load is certainly at night. We basically don't charge, we don't use much electricity between the hours of midnight and somewhere around 4 to 5 a.m. But having just charged about 8 trucks, the trucks represented on the left-hand side, is each truck is scaled to the current that it will draw. So having just about 8 trucks makes our valley equivalent to the peak. And in a station of about 100 trucks, that's where our artificial ceiling or threshold 10% came about, is we know that our valley would become our peak. And that starts, for one, could have negative impact on the grid. And the second, once we create this load, that could be the load for our demand charge for next 3 months, in some cases from some utilities. So how do we manage this load is what we're trying to understand. And we'll gain some great insights, and we will be using those insights to deploy some more EVs shortly. With regards to gaseous fuels, we've had gaseous fuels in the fleet. We had plenty full of these gaseous fuels in the 90s, but once the OEMs discontinued the support, we were left with no support left, and just like every other parcel transportation company, there were no vehicles available. But as they're coming back, we're suddenly retesting them, reevaluating these vehicles. We currently have compressed natural gas vehicles in the U.S., Italy, and Japan. The one concern that we have over a lot of other users is all of our trucks are parked inside. These Class 2 to Class 5 vehicles will mostly be parked indoors, inside the warehouse. With the situations where there could be venting of the gas, there is more to be done to the facilities than just getting the vehicles in. Now we have to start talking about air pockets. Could there be a blocked air pockets? We have to measure, identify those locations which we need to vent out properly. And there's another layer of charge or cost being added to just bringing these vehicles in. One of the other things that we are we're concerned with is most of the natural gas vehicles being brought right now are, again, sub-optimized. They were old diesel engines, those 6, 7, 8-liter diesel engines, which are being repurposed for natural gas. We have worked really hard to right-size those engines, to right-size those to those 3 or sub-3-liter size diesel engines. Going back into those larger engines, albeit for a different fuel, it's still sub-optimization. So that's really of a concern, and we're talking with manufacturers, we're working with manufacturers to really optimize. Again, conservation is a big mantra for us. Whether it be diesel, whether it be natural gas, conservation should always be the prime driver. After that, we start talking about fuels, which fuels to use. So being asked to move again to those big liter engines is again a concern. In summary, and quickly running through it, conservation is basically, it is the prime mantra, and also innovating. Once within the realm of conservation, we need to know what we're doing, what we're hauling, what kind of a work, in definition, in physics terms, what work are we doing, and then match the truck, the box in the back, the drive cycle, the rear end, all those kinds of things, match it to what we're doing, and then optimize on, that gives us the best way to optimize on the energy we use, whichever energy we use, be it extracted from explosion of diesel or be extracted from stored in a battery. That gives us the advantage of optimizing and using the least energy that we can. And within the realm of innovating, always keep on working on newer technologies and vehicles for a fleet. That's it from my end. Thank you.